We're back! Another glitter day has come and gone, and all the good people of the world are back at work, desperately searching for something to give them life.
Well, now you have the podcast that's like munching your way through the snack bins at your grocery's bulk food section. One cashew, two peanuts, ooh, and what's this chocolate thing?
Today, we'll take a look at all the happenings that took place over the break and all the hot, mouth-watering news.
St. Gertrude, I actually know someone who's going to become a saint.
Wendy Williams farts on TV.
Hillary Clinton announces that nobody likes Bernie, then takes it all back the next day.
Chasten Buttigieg, Mayor Pete's husband, says no to the stripper pole.
Batwoman comes out on television.
Bradley Cooper announces he'll be starring, producing, and directing a feature film about the late gay West Side Story composer Leonard Bernstein.
And farewell to composer and kitsch curator Allie Willis, who wrote many pop hits, including Earth, Wind, and Fire September and The Color Purple musical, as well as reintroducing the Del Rubio triplets in the 90s to a new generation. Allie died at the age of 72.
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun. Before we begin, let's listen to Joan Collins read Diane Carroll to filth on the 80s primetime soap opera Dynasty.
Alexis, what do you want?
I've heard you don't care for my singing.
That's right. It's the truth that hurts.
The truth? I hope you say that when I sue you in court for libel.
Oh, you'd only make a fool of yourself, Dominique. Everyone knows that you're nothing but a second-rate lounge act.
I don't care what you say to my face, you viper.
Retract this or I'll cram it down your throat.
Will you? Ow!
Dominique, stop it! Stop it! Get up! Get up!
Anytime you want more of the same, I'll be waiting for you. And I'll be waiting for you to tell the world what a no-talent has-been you are.
Len, would you take care of Miss Devereaux?
Oh, I'll slap her! Slap her!
What in God's name were you doing?
I was defending the freedom of the press.
I was defending the freedom of the press.
Everybody's a critic on the internet these days. That sure. Was in the 1980s.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And that's Joan Collins, who was notorious in the 1980s for being a very strong, sexual, opinionated woman.
Yes.
And she played on the primetime soap opera Dynasty. What was her character?
Alexis
Carrington?
Alexis Morel, Carrington, Colby, Dexter, something or other. I think she's got a few more in there too. I forget.
And then she's opposite an actress that has informed and inspired RuPaul Charles throughout his career, Diane Carroll.
Yes. RuPaul says that she went to the Diane Carroll School of Acting. And, you know, it shows.
And Diane Carroll is best known, well, before that, she was best known as being a pioneering actress, African-American actress, for playing Julia, a nurse, in a similar sort of primetime soap opera.
She was the first primetime lead woman who was African-American, but also very few women at that time even had a role like that on television.
Any role in television.
Yeah, exactly.
And so Dynasty kind of borrowed a lot of the filmmaker Douglas Sirk's camp aesthetic of melodrama and often put these rich, powerful people, especially women, in fur coats and diamonds fighting each other to death on screen.
People eat it up, of course, you know.
And it's kind of ridiculous, the premise here, right? So, because I didn't follow the series when I was a kid. I was too young for it. But it seems like they're always up to scheming ways they can offend and insult and hurt each other. And so throughout the series, she's a wealthy woman, but then she becomes a theater critic and just to piss off Dominique?
I'm not sure exactly how she did that at that point in time. You know, Alexis was always scheming. She was broke, and then she married for money, so that she was really rich, but then she wanted more money, and then I think she lost money. You know, it's always ups and downs.
And they're
always scheming to get more money most of the time, or they want control of the company, of this company. They want to take over somebody else's company. Look, I'm in town. I'm your brother. I'm, you know, your half-sister. I get half the company now, too.
And I feel like we've lost something along the way. Like, when I was a kid, my mother was like, that show is so terrible. Everyone's fighting all the time.
Well, it's the same kind of shows that we have on nowadays. You know?
Well, reality television is very different, I think, than, scripted camp.
Yes.
In the sense that we know we're in on the joke. We know that these are people pretending to fight with each other. Mm-hmm. And so we're sort of laughing at the wealthy, right? We're looking at the, if they can mm-hmm. suffer, if they can be ridiculous and petty with each other, then our struggles aren't so bad. And we're also sort of like looking at the wealthy as mm-hmm. villains.
Yeah.
You know, nowadays we're all like, oh, you know, I just love Warren Buffett. He's so great. He's, you know, but you know what I'm saying? Like,
we still have soap operas. There's tons of soap operas, especially on like the smaller channels. I think Dallas might still even be on the air.
Reruns.
No, but like they still make modern ones. But nowadays, I think we see, you know, I keep thinking about that TV show You, which is on Netflix. It's kind of like, it's at that same kind of vein. It's that same camp aesthetic. Here's this guy who starts stalking people, and he's always just so lucky he doesn't get caught and things happen, and he's always out of it. Dexter was the same kind of character in that certain kind of sense.
Oh, I see. Like he's the anti-hero.
Yeah.
And
but
Joe,
there's a camp aesthetic to it, right?
To some degree, I think that, you know, You really speaks to modern women's anxieties of online dating. Mm-hmm. You know, you always hear the expression, oh, be careful with an anonymous hookup. He could be a serial killer. And in this case, it takes it to the logical conclusion mm-hmm. of that. And it's a lot of fun to watch, and it's definitely addictive in sense of that. But I wanted to play that because I was hearing so many people criticizing RuPaul, I think very unfairly, for her approach, both in AJ and the Queen, but also in Star Booty, when in fact she was really paying tribute to Diane Carroll and this camp aesthetic. That even, you know, shows like, I would say even Camp Wanakiki is completely forgotten. You know, like if you have, imagine a reality television show with 12 drag queens in a summer camp celebrating camp aesthetics, where is the, and at the same time, they don't want people fighting or throwing champagne at each other or, you know what I'm saying? Or right. fake slapping. And I feel like in some ways, you know, in terms of a camp aesthetic, in terms of a humor, when it comes to LGBTQ people, I think there's as Drew Droege said on yesterday's show, and you guys haven't listened to that, definitely check it out, that gay people's purpose, the queer people aesthetic, is to celebrate and criticize something at the same time. And that we can bring something really beautiful by sort of laughing and, you know, taking away the teeth, the power that quarrels and conflicts have to us.
When we look back at our queer culture, some of the things that are really that stand out to us, it's Mommy Dearest, you know, slapping Christina.
That's child abuse as a comedy. We look at, a film like Showgirls, and that's a film that, you know, is absolutely ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But, it also speaks very deeply to the exploitation women have in entertainment. It's years ahead of the Me Too movement, you know. So in some ways, you know, I think that that queer aesthetic, that queer humor is, there's a tragedy that it's light years ahead of its time.
Mm. Well, there's people that are just going to watch it and they're just going to say, you know,
take it at face value.
And there's also people that are going to, a lot of people initially, they watched it. They're like, oh, I watched the whole thing straight through. And it's like, when you binge watch something like that, can you really take it all in? You know what I mean?
I had to watch it twice.
There was some things, especially because we were talking to Drew, I was just like, let's watch these episodes again because I want to kind of understand. And there's a lot of stuff that I kind of missed the first time around. There's things that I got to chuckle over it again.
I'm blind, bitch!
every episode you got to
Yeah, I think Cocoa Butter, Michael I forgot his last name, the actor, but the alligator from Princess and the Frog, he really steals the series, in my opinion. And that character is a really complicated and tricky one because it is very non-PC. They're casting a seeing eye person and they're making a lot of jokes about a blind person. But I think, you know, I don't know. I think it was done in a really good way and with a lot of love in its heart.
I'm sure somebody out there will be like, that's not cool. You know, a lot of people will probably say they should have hired a blind person for that role. Because, you know, it's a hard call. Because it's like you have to find somebody that's going to do this role and do it well and fit in with everybody.
And I like that they went out of their way to try to work in some of the Rue girls into the series. They didn't have to. You know, they could have cast a bunch of, you know, actors pretending to be drag queens. I mean, Mara Cantone isn't a drag queen, but he is an openly gay comedian. And so it was nice to see him in drag, you know, and it would have been just as entertaining and interesting to see, you know, Jim Parsons, for example, making a cameo in it. Yeah, so I really appreciate they can afford him.
But, you know, it's interesting, you know, because we did see a lot of Rue girls. But when you think about it, of all the girls from RuPaul's Drag Race who got roles that were kind of at least somewhat fleshed out, it was Latrice Royale. And we got to talk to Drew Droege about that on yesterday's podcast. And the other person was Ginger Minj, who played a party planner.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'd say of the two roles that Latrice's was definitely kind of more fleshed out, whereas Ginger's was just kind of like a persnickety gay guy. Who's just like, you're going to do this, this, and this, telling RuPaul what she's going to do in this, at this house party and entertain guests. And Rue's just like, and Rue comes to find out, she's just like, I don't like being in drag if I'm not performing. It's uncomfortable. You know? And that's really something that's the other interesting thing about the show is you really kind of examine some of RuPaul's values, the things that she says in her own life that have made it into the script.
And that's what I like about AJ and the Queen, and why it was such a fun holiday break series to consume, to sort of lose yourself off of. You know, a lot of us go visit our families and we're kind of like miserable or, you know, just decompressing over the year, over the holiday break. And so it's nice to sort of lose yourself in this world where, you know, somebody else has problems or or different type of problems.
By a very handsome man.
Yeah. Yes. the hunk from the Orange is the New Black. Mm-hmm. How's your holiday break?
I'm not done talking about that. And if you want to also too, you can also, I enticed my husband the other day with a little AJ and the Queen role play. he's in the bathroom, he's brushing his teeth. I said, let's do a little AJ and the Queen role play. He's like, what? He's just like, you play Damien and I'll be Lady Danger. And I put like one hand over my eye to have like the eye patch, and then I was just like, what are we gonna, are we gonna fuck or what? Is that a good Tia Carrera
that's
accent?
Pretty good. Yeah. She has that Hawaii kind of a Valley Girl thing combined there.
Yeah, I think she opted up for it. She changed her voice a little bit for this.
Hey, what are we doing? Are we going to fuck or what? Well, I'm glad to be back.
I'm glad to be back too.
We're back, bitches. That's only trashy people say that.
Yeah.
Because they just got out of jail.
They're like, back. We're like, well,
where you been?
Jail.
I was in prison.
For what?
Stealing people's hearts.
Oh. I wonder what all those dead bodies in the basement without hearts were. So right before we went on break, I got this amazing news. So this woman that I knew, Dr. Gertrude Barber, she's founded a foundation, the Barber Institute, that took care of special needs kids. As you guys know, that my sister Monica had Down syndrome. Part of the reason why my family moved to the town of Erie, Pennsylvania, is so that Monica could attend this kind of program.
Yeah.
Because, you know, beforehand, they were putting kids like Monica, they didn't have special education programs for them, for young people. Sometimes kids were sent to mental institutions.
They were isolated,
but they were also mixed in with the people who had, you know, mental problems.
Were violent.
You know, bipolar, schizophrenic, all those kinds of things, with people who were developmentally disabled. And it was like, you know, sometimes there's some intersectionality there, but more often than that, it's like you can't serve like the same two things at the same time. And so it was really, it was about education. And my sister has been involved in, at the Barber Institute and has ongoing education and mentorship and things. So my mom's been on the board of directors there for years. She's still on there, but she's not active. She's honorary at this point in time. She can't vote. And it was recently announced just before we went on break that the Archdiocese of Erie, where I grew up in, I was raised Catholic, is looking into canonizing her as a saint, which I was just like, it's so amazing to me that I, that, you know, that somebody like her was getting recognized for this very, very important work. Now, I have lots of problems with the Catholic Church, as you guys can well imagine being a gay person. But I think it's wonderful that she's getting recognized for that. And I just like, part of me is just like, holy shit, I know somebody who might be a saint someday.
Well, then Alaska Thunderfuck also is from Erie and went to Catholic school. And
she is, yes, yes.
And so maybe one day Alaska Thunderfuck will be a Catholic saint too.
Maybe she will. I wonder for what. But you know, the
saint
thing is,
fuck.
And I think the thing about too is this is like one of these things that like inspires me, and you know, she has inspired me. And I think having a sister like Monica has really created the kind of person who I am. And
how so?
And in the way that, you know, I accept people just in, for who they are. You know, every person has value. And I know a lot of people say that, but I really, you know, when you see people that are just kind of like sitting there in a wheelchair, they don't interact with people. They don't, like, it's hard to explain in that sense that there's very little interaction with other people. People, you know, we work in this capitalistic society where we're always expected to produce. And here are people that are just, you know, they're just alive. And, I mean, they can love you and you can love them. And they're cared for. And society looks for them. And the group of people has come together and said, these are vulnerable people. These are people that need care. They need education. They need the tools. And, you know, we live in this society where everything's being cut. Funding for this, Social Security they want to cut into. And we look at people and say, this is real work, and saying, these are people and they have value. And you have to look at these people and even the people that you don't like and recognize the humanity in them.
Everybody deserves to be loved just by their very existence.
Right.
Everybody deserves education. Everybody deserves food on their table. Mm-hmm. They deserve a warm place to sleep, a home.
Healthcare.
They deserve healthcare. Mm-hmm. They deserve to be loved.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't like with people asking me, who are you going to push for? Who do you vote for? Like other podcasters are making news like, I'm voting for this person or this person, you know? Mm-hmm. And to me, I'm like, you know, I'm really thrilled that in terms of universal health care, universal education, that that's front and center in the Democratic Party this election. And I would love to see President Bernie Sanders. I really would. I'm pushing for him. But I, you know, it's kind of like if I went to an ice cream parlor and I had my mouth all watering for some Rocky Road ice cream and they said, sorry, we're out of Rocky Road, but we have pistachio. Mm. And I'm like, you know what? It's still ice cream. Mm. And with Elizabeth Warren, you know, she's made some mistakes, mm-hmm. but she's still mm-hmm. a progressive candidate. Mm-hmm. And I'd be thrilled to have her as president of the United States as well.
Now, my friends back home who also, like a lot of them, have worked at the Barber Institute, you know, shared some of the same kind of family values and stuff, and have called me and were like, well, don't they have to perform miracles and stuff to become a saint?
Oh, you're talking about St. Gertrude.
Yeah. 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 I never got
off the subject. Not Bernie Sanders.
No, I never got off the subject.
Yeah.
And so my friends who worked at the Barber Institute and my friends that I've known for years who have grown up in the same kind of situation, you know, have written to me and they're just like, or talked to me on the phone and they say, but doesn't Gertrude have to perform some kind of miracle? And I would say, well, didn't she cure you? And then they go, of what? I'm like,
of being an asshole. Oh.
And then they're just like, oh man. You know, like I said, use that on everyone. They're going to love it.
Well, best of luck to St. Gertrude.
Yes.
And may she rest in peace.
You say a prayer for her, for me.
Save a prayer for me now. So how was your holiday break for you, Mark?
You know, it was good in the sense that, you know, I got to see your family. I unfortunately didn't get a chance to see my family. And a lot of people might think we just don't do anything over the break. But a lot of it is just kind of me organizing this house and getting it ready for our 16th season on Feast of Fun.
Oh, my God. You know,
we live in this place. We work in this place. We've got people coming, people going. And it's just, it's a lot to maintain. maintain, and it's a lot of work, and I put hours and hours and hours and days of my Christmas break and weeks of my Christmas break into doing that.
And so much dust.
Yes.
It's so dusty.
Well, not so much anymore, but it was, you know.
Yeah. It's like, I got to tell you, you know, I went to visit our mom in Texas, and she loves any horizontal surface is covered with picture frames.
Yes.
And I'm just like, at a certain point, I was just like, I had hives. I had a hay fever. I had cedar fever.
You're very sensitive
to so much dust. I still feel like, you know, like, what is it? I just feel very consumed with dirt. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad to be back in Chicago where the weather's kind of cleared and stuff. And we went to see the Andy Warhol exhibit at the Art Institute of Chicago, not the fraudulent one that does ads at 3 a.m. Like, do you like cartoons? Do you like playing video games? Sign up at the Art Institute's. It's a singular.
Yes. Yes.
So my alma mater, I went to school there. And they had this wonderful exhibit of Andy Warhol's art where you get to see it face to face. Mm. The great Andy Warhol who changed a lot of ways we think about, you know, design, about art, about culture, about entertainers. And one thing that really struck me when we went to the exhibit is his contribution to sort of destroying the monopoly, the oligopoly of copyright. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, like, if you're a person who makes stuff on the internet, puts it out there, like, you know, Cooking with Drag Queens, how many people have ripped off that show, right? To some degree, it's like, you know, you want to be able to create a space where derivative works are made. Unfortunately, sometimes the only people who can protect their intellectual copyright are the ones who can afford to fight over it. And so what happens is, like, you know, corporations like Disney is, you know, putting elementary schools out of business because they sue somebody for painting a Mickey Mouse on the door. And, you know, people like us, we can create ideas and shows and formats. And someone like Paris Hilton can wake up the next day and say, you know, I'm going to do, instead of Cooking with Drag Queens, it's going to be about me, Cooking with Paris. And I was like, I watched the show and I was like, God damn, I can't believe that they show such a shameless ripoff of our show, of our series.
In what way?
Just in the sense, well, the title first, and obviously it's a cooking show, so she could call it a million other things. You know, if you think about the history of cooking shows and videos on YouTube, you know, most people don't describe it in the way we have. The reason we did that was just because it was kind of a ridiculous thing to say, right? Cooking with drag queens. Paris Hilton's format, it's almost shot for shot, the same approach. It reminds me a lot of when Detox actually did her own ripoff version of Cooking with Drag Queens, where she was making croutons with her mother and then drinking wine with her. And it was like, to me, I flatter imitation is the laziest form of flattery, but it is still flattery.
Of a mediocre mind.
Yeah.
No, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery from a mediocre mind.
And to me, I'm like, you know, I'm really glad to see those individuals do that because it gives me a lot of validation that they're not struggling with money. Obviously, like someone like Detox or Paris Hilton has their bank account is doing great. Mine is not. But when it comes to the bank account of ideas and creativity, they're starving to death. Literally. There's a sense of panic and urgency and desperation that comes from somebody who goes after somebody so meek, you know, like us, that they feel like they love the idea so much that they go, that belongs to me now. Mm. And to some degree,
do you think Paris saw Cooking with Drag Queens and decided to rip it off?
I have no idea.
I saw a little bit of it. Or do you think just one of her people did? Or is she moving into the house? Because, you know, she has a whole beauty line, right? And that is, she might be thinking like, listen, I'm just going to become the next Martha Stewart and just start cooking and doing this. And I'm going to be like a housewife, you know, and become a gazillionaire like her.
Well, if she would have, she would have wanted to call it, you know, Martha's TV show was called Living. Mm-hmm. Julia Childs was called,
Living.
The French cuisine. Yeah. I can't even remember the Julia Childs, show title, well, but
I think we named ours after the book, the cookbook, Cooking with Pooh, right? If you're a plus member, you can go back and you can the most ridiculous cooking shows ever.
Cooking with Drag Queens predates Cooking with Pooh.
Are you sure?
Yes, we did an episode of ridiculous cookbooks to promote the rebooting of Cooking with Drag Queens.
Okay.
Yes, that's why we did that episode. You know, to me, it's. I think it's really flattering, and it speaks to me a lot of what that person is. You know, when you see, when somebody tells you, they don't value you as a person, but they do value your ideas. Mm-hmm. In some ways, to me, it's a flattering insult, if I can describe it that way, where it's like, you know, they can't compliment you, but they're still complimenting you by stealing something that's very intimate to you, which is your heart, your mind, your soul, your ideas, your creativity. And I always tell people, it's like, you know, if you don't have the power to fight back, at least put ideas out there that are worth stealing. And one thing that I always want people, you know, in terms of like being cloned to death, right? Like this podcast has been cloned to death. Cooking with Drag Queens is in the process of doing that, is that, you know, at least create a space where people have to sit down and listen to each other, or create a space where people are inspired to make food at home. And it really sort of, it is a secret. I mean, if you think about like all the good things that we have as a result of the internet, podcasting is one of those things where people are required or inspired to have a conversation with each other. Mm. And, you know, in the early days of podcasting, it was a lot of people just talking, you know, or doing their stump speeches. They were reading their manifestos. They were reading their blogs. They were not really having to,
have a dialogue
with another person. And so in some ways, like one of the best things about the internet is podcasting. And so one of the best videos in terms of genres is cooking videos that require people to teach each other how to make food and inspire them to make food at home. Mm. And I think there's something very political to that. And so if Paris Hilton, you know, and she has millions of people, you know, lots of resources, lots of money to promote that stuff. If she can get a lot of more people to eat at home as opposed to, you know, eating fried food at a fast food place, I think more power to her.
I didn't really watch it, but the video looked dark, right? Didn't it? Was it kind of dark?
I'm sure it's well produced. Yeah. I didn't have any problem with the production values, you know, and most people don't really like, you know, when it comes to like
home videos, like it's a home video, right?
No, it's produced by, I mean, with Paris Hilton, she's a millionaire, Mark. She's literally has about as much money as, you know, one of Oprah Winfrey's rich, like Dr. Oz, you know, one of her proteges. She's loaded. So she can, you know, start her own television network if she wanted to. And so for her, it's like, oh, yeah, I want to do that. And she, I think it's great. You know,
she was an early podcaster, too, right? From back when we started around the same
because
time.
Because
we
were podcasting. Yeah, people started copying that, too. You know, it was like.
And this is my podcast. Watch my TV show. Back when people used to think podcasts were ads for their television shows.
Yeah. And Paris Hilton, she got copied herself. And the result was Kim Kardashian. Mm. I mean, if you listen to Kim Kardashian talking, she's very much, you can see the similarities between these two dilettantes.
Well, she was, quote unquote, her personal assistant for a while, right?
And I was like, be careful who you hire as a personal assistant. That's what I got to say. You know, they're coming after you, honey.
They learn the tricks of the trade. And what's coming up with Cooking with Drag Queens this year? We still have two episodes to release. One with Disasterina.
Disasterina!
And another with Vivacious from RuPaul's Drag Race.
And I think from now on, I think with Cooking with Drag Queens, we're going to be in drag all the time.
Yeah.
So people want to see me butch, you can go see me on Instagram. Because I just feel like, you know, with Cooking with Drag Queens, I'm getting inspired by Pee Wee's Playhouse. I'm getting inspired by Zoom, and I'm inspired by just, you know, the idea of like people trying things and, you know, mukbang videos and eating videos and all this kind of stuff. And I just feel like I want to kind of take Cooking with Drag Queens in a new direction again and invite, poets and musicians and activists and, media personalities and people who don't necessarily identify as drag queens to be interacting in that kind of space.
Are we gonna get them up in drags?
I said, just make sure you're wearing a little something. Because I love T.S. Madison. I think she was fantastic on the show. But she did not dress up for the show. And I was, I was disappointed that she chose to do that.
Yeah, it was a very casual look for her.
Yeah, she's wearing like a black blouse and her hair down. And I was just like, what? You know? And of course, when she goes to DragCon, it's, you know, a pink plastic dress and a big bouffant hairdo and hoop earrings and
I'm colorful stuff. Well, I'm grateful that she did commentary.
Oh, my God, yeah. But that's what I'm saying. So it's like, part of it is like, I want to really encourage our future guests to dress up.
To wow
us, yeah. It's a visual show. Aim to please the eyes. Chasten Buttigieg, you guys know, is affectionately called Melted Ice Cream by Matt Brown on the show.
Melted Ice Cream Cone.
He was doing a fundraiser for his husband and himself,
Pete,
right?
Pete Buttigieg,
who's the first mainstream possible gay candidate for president of the United States of America. And they had it at a gay bar who had a stripper pole. And they were supposed to start it. And then 20 minutes before it was supposed to begin, like, people had gone to the event expecting to meet and have a photo with Chasten Buttigieg. And he said, you know what? That stripper pole's still up. And I'm not a cheap hoe, honey. I'm an expensive one. And stripper poles are for cheap hoes. Okay.
And I don't know what it is, what you think you're doing at the cheetah, but it ain't dancing. I messed that up. But it's okay. Yeah. You guys know what I mean.
I just think it's kind of weird. Like, why, if you had a problem with the stripper pole, why did you even, like, start the...
You know, people say, hey, come to this bar. We're gonna do a fundraiser for you. At this point in time, they know they're probably not going to get the nomination. But you know what? Keep that money coming in. Because once you have that money's yours. So at this point in time for the Buttigieg, it's a money grab. Now, what they do with that money is going to be, you know, run for something else, maybe run for governor of Indiana someday or do something else, get into this next cabinet, or just put it into your war chest. And so he's going around doing as much fundraising as he can. He's meeting with people. They're saying, we're going to do it here. It's a gay bar. Okay, that's great. We get there, like, holy shit, there's a stripper pole in there. If I get photographed with a stripper pole, people are going to, you know, think that we're tacky, that we're crass.
They're going to think I'm Donald Trump.
They're going to think we're Donald Trump. Because, you know, when you're a Democrat, you have to be irreproachable. You can't have that kind of stuff. But in my mind, I'm just kind of like, you guys are gay. You're a bunch of gay men. You have a stripper pole there. You don't want people to see it. Disguise it. Put some garland around it. Put some flowers on it. But, you know, do whatever you can do.
Put some Christmas decorations and say we forgot to take it down.
You know, just do whatever. It's just like, you can't hide that thing.
It shows lack of creativity.
But the easiest solution for them, and probably the size of the crowd that was ever gathered where, was just to choose a different location. So they just went someplace else.
We done meet and greets in bars that had stripper poles.
We sure did. Hey. We had fun too.
And I was like, this is fun. You know, it's like, there's photos of me in a stripper pole. No one's going to think, you know, less of me.
But you're also not, you know,
running. I'm not running for president of the United States, you know.
Thankfully. Although you do a better job than the current one, that's for sure.
I think part of it is like, I'm disappointed in that. I think, you know, Pete Buttigieg is, and people ask me, why are you not some more supporting of him? You know, and I feel like he's too conservative. He's probably the most conservative candidate right now. And, you know, Joe Biden is running and Yang is running and he's more conservative than them. And I'm like, why? He doesn't need to be.
I'm super glad there's a gay person out there front and forward, you know, even though they're not like always advocating for us. Like, you know, like that's not their only part of their platform. Mm-hmm. It is part of their platform, which is important.
And maybe one day, you know, Pete Buttigieg will be a much more progressive candidate than he is today.
Yeah.
Certainly, you know, politicians. He needs
to meet with the working people.
He needs to meet with us. I invited him on the podcast and silence. And then I get an email saying, would you like to donate to Pete Buttigieg's
just
$1 campaign?
And I'm like, and we'll send you this sticker that's a tie and a collar that's basically just a phallus. It's crazy.
Oh, because his campaign sticker was like...
It's a tie and a collar.
And it looks like a dick.
It basically looks like, you know, not exactly like...
Do you think that's subconscious?
Of course it is.
Because part of me is like, you know, I'm wondering, like, in case these kind of things are being done, you know, like Hillary Clinton announcing that nobody likes Bernie and then the next day she takes it all back.
Well, it wouldn't be Hillary Clinton if it weren't a flip-flop, right?
Well, with her, it's more like... what is those called? Crocs, culottes, or what do the women's wear at the beach? The jelly sandals, or anyways, but
chancletas.
You know, part of me is like,
that's a flip flop.
I wonder. I would like to think that Hillary Clinton is 4D chessing this, and you know, she's sort of trying to get Bernie elected by saying she doesn't endorse him.
I don't know. She certainly, you know, they really stole that primary from him last time, I think, with the super delegates. And so it's...
Well, the super delegate thing was not a fair fight, for sure.
No. And it's, you know, they have to really rethink those super delegates. And, you know, the super delegates might give it to somebody else again this year, too. It might not be Bernie, even though it seems
I thought they're not using the super delegates anymore.
Oh, they're not?
Yeah. I think the DNC started out the primary season saying that we're not going to be going that route.
Oh, I had
purposefully because of the controversy.
Oh, okay. I'll have to research that or just fact check that at a later date. We'll see.
I you know, part of it is like, it is disappointing that people are just like up in arms about whether they agree or disagree with Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders or Warren. And I'm like, listen, you know, these politicians right now, it is a hot contest. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty mm-hmm. obvious that it's going to be very hard for Donald mm-hmm. Trump to win mm-hmm. re-election.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's also, you know, when Elizabeth Warren came up to him after that last debate, and she's like, I think you just called me a liar on national television. And he's like, let's talk about this
later. Let's not do this right now.
We'll talk about this later. Because, you know, it's like, those microphones are hot. And she had to have known those microphones were hot. What was she hoping when she would
she's hoping that, you know, she can cause a disruption and you know, bring that up. And, mm-hmm. and it is disappointing. Mm-hmm. I like Elizabeth Warren, and I thought that was disappointing that she had that behavior. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, if you look at least at Bernie Sanders, you know, he's not mm-hmm. been bad-mouthing any candidates. Mm-hmm. And certainly has been very instrumental in supporting Warren for running for president. Mm-hmm. And has been helping her campaign quite a bit.
Did she just mishear him? Did he actually say this? It's impossible. Like, you know, that a woman...
Let's assume that he did what she said he did, right? Okay. What the hell would you wait so long to, one, criticize or bring it up? Mm-hmm. Second of all, okay, so he said, you know, he doesn't think women should be president of the United States. But then why is he supporting her? Why is he helping so many women become empowered and hold office? Mm-hmm. If he doesn't believe that, and he said that at one point in time, but nowhere else ever, why are his actions contradicting that one statement that she claims to make?
Because, you know, she's trying to say that, like, I know the real Bernie, right? You don't really
sure.
know.
Sure. And I guess Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and, you know, all the squad and all these other women who are endorsing him and are partnering with him and rely on his endorsement of them, they don't feel that they know him, the real him. Only Elizabeth Warren knows mm-hmm. him. Nobody else on the planet Earth knows Bernie Sanders except Elizabeth Warren. And I don't think that's fair. And I think that's disappointing. And I think, you know, it makes her come across as manipulative. And I'm like, we want to believe women and we want to, but at the same time, politicians do pull some shady shit, and this is shady shit. Mm-hmm. And I like to see better from all the candidates, including Joe Biden and Pete Buttigieg.
Well, and how far away are we from these primaries? They're coming up pretty soon. So hopefully
months
we'll see
away,
some
yeah.
of them like drop. I just want to like, can we just time travel to the future in a certain
it's
sense?
It's anxiety, you know, because the consequence of this is having Trump again. And living in a dictatorship.
Yeah, and we just can't have that.
So I think it's good that the Democratic Party, the candidates, are trying to sabotage each other. I know it's anxiety building, but at the same time, anything that they're doing, Trump and the Republicans are going to do 100 times as much. Mm. So it's, in some ways it's good for them to do it here in the primaries, as opposed to doing it after the candidate gets chosen. Don't you think?
I would think so.
I mean, imagine if Bernie Sanders said something like that about Hillary Clinton after she had become the candidate and was trying to run against Trump. That would be terrible. And he didn't. He actually put a lot of energy and time into helping her get elected.
Do we need Hillary Clinton? Do we need Hillary Clinton to actively campaign for Bernie?
We need everybody. Everything matters.
Okay.
I mean, you know, Black Lives Matter, but everything also is an important factor in what it takes to become president and to have a progressive agenda go front and center. So, you know, you guys may disagree with what we're saying right now, and a lot of you do, and you guys tell us about it. And I'm very open to having a conversation about this stuff. I think, you know, we're so eager to fight with each other on social media, especially Facebook. It is a platform that is designed to get us to fight with each other. And to some degree, when Facebook understands that if Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren become president, they're going to get broken up. Mm-hmm. That's going to hurt their investor. That's going to hurt Zuckerberg's pockets. So they're going to do everything they can sneakily to get us fighting amongst ourselves in order to get people not to vote. Because when people vote, Facebook gets split up. Think about that. Mm-hmm. If everybody went out to vote this election, the next year,
what does Facebook even look like?
You know, they're going to force the advertising department to be a separate corporation other than the social media department. There's a lot of ways to split up these gigantic corporations. And they've been done. They're the monopoly, you know, to some degree. Like, you know, people think about the internet as Facebook and nothing else. So splitting it up, there's million antitrust and trust busting is a very complicated thing. And you can guarantee if people are unified in this election and they go out to vote, Facebook and Twitter, Apple, Google, all these tech companies will be split up, and it's going to hurt their investors. If you invest in these companies, it may hurt you, you know, but as a human being, as a person who believes in democracy, who believes in marginalized people, obviously you listen to this podcast, mm-hmm. you care about us, you care about the voices that we have. You want people to be voting. You want to live in a social democracy. And so that's why a lot of these tech companies are going to do everything they can to discourage people from voting.
So just be aware of fake news and slant and political bias. You know, I trust you guys to do your due diligence. All my friends on Facebook, I'm please begging you, please don't share old articles or things that haven't been substantiated. I know I sometimes do it myself. I get a little trigger happy when I'm on my mobile device thinking like, oh, this is so good, I got to share it and think about it sometimes.
Well, you know, here's an antidote to fake news is Wendy Williams' Fartgate.
Oh.
Well, did she rip it or did she not? Mm-hmm. I'm going to play a little excerpt of it for you guys, and you can decide for yourselves. Did she dealt it? Did she smelt it?
Mm. That cop wasn't playing that. I mean, you're lucky you only got battery. What if he filed for sexual assault?
Was it? Do you feel like it was a fart?
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like it could be a fart, but it also could be like, I don't know, her girdle or something else, you know, her
It was
shoe,
air between was leather, her tires.
You know, air between her titties coming out.
It was a queef.
You know, it could be anything.
You guys know what a queef
is? Sound room.
Yeah. It could be somebody else.
A fart.
Yeah.
As a queef.
Well, this is the thing about it is like, isn't Wendy Williams' show pre-recorded and then, you know, in quotations live, but it really isn't live. Mm-hmm. And couldn't the people in the studio mute that?
Maybe they didn't hear it.
And they were like, that's it to me. I'm just like, it's so loud. Like even the audience is kind of going, what's that?
Sounds like pepperoni.
Was that an elephant? It happened to me. I was like, my family would drive me crazy. We're having a party. And they're just like, sometimes they're like hyenas. Yes. Well, not Christmas dinner. It was a party that we had where we were sitting, you know. We were done eating, and I was just like, Mark and I had done most of the cooking. And I was just like a little bit gassy, a little very exhausted. I had no sleep. Allergies were going crazy. And I just thought, you know, I'm just going to let a little one rip. And it made so much noise. And everybody was like, oh, my God. I was like, they're ready to murder me.
I, fortunately, was not in the room at the time. I was in the kitchen. And they're like, what happened? I'm like, files so far to the table. And I was just like, cochino.
Was that in English?
Pig.
Pig.
Farting at the table.
I didn't mean to do it, you know. I'm just like Wendy Williams is like.
It just came out.
Well, she's. What do you want her to do? Like, you know, suck it in? I mean, have you, you know, sometimes farts just have to go out.
Sometimes they have to go out. Yes, exactly. You're right.
I deal in customer service with people.
You feel like it's coming. Yeah. You get up from this. You excuse yourself from the table. You walk away. You go to the bathroom. You fart. Do your thing.
I've had a lot of customers, a lot of coworkers fart right next to me. And I just go, do you want to use the bathroom, honey? Because, you know, when a fart comes out, it's a little ghost of your poop trying to escape.
Saying boo.
Boo.
It's boo from ghosts.
Boo. I scared you.
Ghost poops.
So I don't. I think it's okay. Cher's mad at Wendy Williams.
Why?
Because she was making fun of kids with cleft lips, and I guess a football player was having their child having surgery to correct that.
And Wendy Williams is kind of like lift her lip up to the one side and did a kind of a thing and just said some things. And Cher was just like, you should fire her.
Cancel culture.
Ever since Cher was involved in that movie Mask with the kid who had facial deformity, she's worked with a lot of organizations on their behalf. And she's very embedded in that community.
Well, I don't know. Part of me is like, I don't sweat what Wendy Williams says or does very much because I don't
watch her.
You know, it's entertainment.
No, you only see the bits and pieces that like when she farts or she does something like that.
Or she faints dressed up as a Statue of Liberty. No, that was kind of funny, but also, you know, she could have been hurt.
Mm.
So.
And was it real? Do you think she just has like, what's a bunch of gags that will make it onto YouTube so people will pay attention to the show?
I hope that doesn't like, you know, escalate. They probably
sit around, you know?
Yeah. You're very excited about a new series coming up, Picard.
I am very excited. So I guess today's the day. Really, it's going to premiere today on CBS All Access, right? Yeah.
But it's like all these subscription things. I'm like, girl.
It's time. We need to cancel Disney.
Disney Plus, you're out.
You're out. We already watched The Mandalorian and The Cat from Outer Space. And so it's all over now. But yeah, Picard is going to take care in the future. He's retired from Starfleet, but he's going to go on a special mission. And it looks like he's going to be working with Seven of Nine from Voyager. So there'll be more Borg and Hugh, who is a rescued Borg. So it looks like in this future, the Borg are going to have a different place in society.
Didn't the actor who played Hugh, he died of AIDS?
No. His partner died of AIDS.
Oh. And
so he survived.
The actor who played Hugh.
He's playing Hugh.
But I think there's, and he's paying tribute to his late lover in real life.
I think during that period when he was filming that, I think the guy was either dead or died.
Oh.
Something along that lines. I forgot. I read the article, but it's
been. So there's going to be a gay AIDS angle / Borg thing happening? Or
You know, maybe. Who knows?
Whoopi Goldberg was surprised by Patrick Stewart on The View when he said, would you like to be on the second season?
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, yes!
Bitch, why wasn't I on the first season? You and I had that thing. You'd come into 10-4, I'd be wearing that purple. I'd take off the hat.
Like, what's underneath the hat?
You know, tentacles. No, she'd take the hat off sometimes.
Yeah, I don't know why she wore that weird hat. It's like it was part of her
culture.
Culture, yeah.
You know, but it was like, don't fuck with me, I'm the bartender.
Do you think it's a bad idea to ask somebody if they want a job on national television?
Oh, I think it's cute.
Because it lowers, it takes away the negotiation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, then she just has to accept whatever they offer to pay her.
Basically, right?
She can't, like, be like, well, I'm a big star now. Mm-hmm. I have Oscars, you know. Back when Whoopi accepted the role, she only had the color purple underneath her belt.
Wow.
Now she's, you know, she's a huge star.
That's true.
So she could ask for a little bit more money. And so maybe Patrick Stewart was being a little manipulative by asking her on a show, knowing she could not say no.
Wow. You know what? I think CBS All Access made a ton of money from, is going to make a ton of money from the show, so they probably will be able to afford her.
This will be like, honey, she was crying because she's like, ooh, I get to buy another tour bus. Whoopi Goldberg doesn't like to fly in airplanes.
No, she doesn't.
Does she take trains or does she just drive everywhere? Or?
I think she likes buses, right?
Yeah, just like RuPaul
and
AJ and the Queen.
That's an RV.
An RV.
My Winnebago that I store in Queens.
Yeah. Do you think that's a like thing for entertainers or celebrities that are African American that they get nervous on airplanes or something? Because I heard Aretha Franklin was that way too.
She also traveled by bus, but also yeah. too she also had a band. So how else are you going to do it?
I don't work in that industry. A lot of other bands fly.
Yeah, I mean, so a band, a bus might cost you a couple $1,000s a day, or you know, maybe even less. I don't know. And then flying everybody is going to be tens of thousands.
Maybe that's their excuse to make things affordable. Is that they say I'm really scared of flying, so they don't get pressured in putting themselves and their whole family in first class tickets.
I don't know.
And instead, you know, they just live it up in a nice, comfortable several tour buses. Mm-hmm. I think that might be preferable, especially if you're not in a hurry. Mm-hmm. But I heard Lady Bunny was telling us about, you know, traveling with the Drag Queen Christmas tour mm-hmm. bus. And she said it was very stressful to be in that bus, even though everybody was very well behaved mm-hmm. and Latrice was with her, you know, and she and Latrice are best friends. But it's just, you know, you're living in tiny little quarters.
Yeah. You have a tiny little quarters, tiny little bed. You're performing late at night. You get on the bus, you're traveling the next morning. You're moving the whole time.
Yeah.
And then you're parked at different places and you can't go number two on that bus.
You can't poop on the tour bus?
No, you can't poop. No.
Girl, get some diapers. Or do they pull over every time somebody has to poop?
They pull
or
over.
They're all farting?
I guess
like Wendy Williams or me.
Maybe they just don't eat.
Or they're just starving to death.
Mm.
But so you can't have any coffee then in the morning?
No. Let's talk about how James Mansfield ruined Christmas for me.
What? What happened?
I woke up on Christmas morning. I was just like, yay, it's Christmas morning. How wonderful. Let's start this day off.
You opened up all your presents.
And then I looked on Facebook on our Feast of Fun friends and family group. And what do I see? The obituary for Allie Willis. She
died on so Christmas sad. Morning. Well, I think it's a good, you know, if you're going to go on Christmas. Eartha Kitt died on Christmas as well. You know?
Yeah.
And she sang Santa Baby. Mm-hmm. So,
but I don't know. I'm one of those people, like, if it's bad news on Christmas, I wouldn't share it. I would wait until, like, later on in the day. I would maybe...
Well,
like,
if you're so worried about your day being ruined on Christmas, don't go on the internet.
Well, I didn't expect to wake up to the death of Allie Willis, you know.
Well, because we cared about her.
Composer. Yeah.
Yeah, she is somebody who definitely directly and indirectly informed my aesthetic and this show very deeply. And she is somebody who, you know, rags to riches. She became a sensation for being a pop music composer for Earth, Wind, and Fire, of all things. You know, this
September, that song.
Yeah, September. She did Neutron Dance. Yeah, the same. What's the same theme song to Friends?
I'll Be There for You.
I'll Be There for You.
Sung by the Rembrandts, who hated that song because it was nothing like any of their other music that they ever made.
And then they got paid for it.
And they got because they didn't write it.
But she used that money to put it to good use. She helped with her music money. She created a museum of kitsch.
Well, that's her house.
Her house, but it was open to the public.
She decorated her house.
The Allie Willis Museum of Kitsch, and mm-hmm. she created a website mm-hmm. and, you know, used, she created art as well mm-hmm. under the artistic name Bubbles the Artist.
Aww.
And in the late 80s, she was instrumental in bringing the Del Rubio triplets out of retirement. And these triplets, you guys might remember them from Pee Wee's Christmas special where they played Winter Wonderland.
And they were also on an episode of The Golden Girls, right?
Yeah, they were kind of a thing back in the late 80s and early 90s.
Same on variety shows.
And I just discovered the cassette tape in art school of all places. And I fell in love with them. I thought their weird sensibility, the way that they play the guitars, the fact that their voices sound almost identical, and they're just kind of popping in left and right on the, and it just really, spoke to me and as a little young gay boy. And to me, it was such a thrill and honor and delight to have Ali Willis on the podcast. Mm. We taped that show in my mother's dining room table
in Austin, Texas, during South by Southwest.
And Ali Willis came in, and my mother's house is full of junk, full of crazy art. And Ali pulled out her camera and said, "This is all belongs in a museum."
I'm taking pictures of everything.
And she was taking pictures and pictures and pictures of everything. My mother was delighted by her. Mm. And since then, she helped create and write and produce the Color Purple musical. So we also asked Ali, because we sometimes what her sexual orientation, or
because she came off as a dyke to me.
And on the show, she was not very forthcoming. But no. Her obituary says she is survived by her partner, Prudence Fenton.
Yeah.
Who is a woman, mm-hmm. or at least presents as a woman, mm-hmm. on social media. And her brother, Kent, and sister, Marlon. So mm-hmm. we were actually was writing to Ali on Facebook last year about going to Los Angeles in the spring for DragCon and filming Cooking with Drag Queens in her home kitchen.
Aww.
And so unfortunately that dream will have to take place in another universe, in another reality. Aww. So she died in her sleep. And so folks, life is short. Make the most of every moment that you have, because you never know what happens tomorrow. She was 72 years young and gone too soon, for sure.
Heart attack and died?
Mm-hmm. Cardiac arrest.
Yeah.
During her sleep. But she had, she had so many hits. She got Emmy nominations, Tony nominations, and her music will forever be with us. So that's the wonderful thing. And that album of the Rubo Triplets is still in my iPhone.
And you bought the Christmas album of the Rubo Triplets.
Yeah. So,
and how was it?
It's not, there's a reason why it wasn't released to the public. It's very strange and very religious, actually.
Yeah.
So it's gospel music. Half of it is gospel music, for Latinos. You know, they're Panamanian, mm-hmm. American, the Del Rubio Triplets. And I thought, the best song, some of the few songs are, I think Winter Wonderland is one of the best ones, definitely from that album. And you guys heard it on Pee Wee's Christmas special. But mm-hmm. while they were touring around that time, they created a Christmas album that is not released to the public, but you can find rare vintage copies of it. And I just happen to have one, and it was sitting around. So I got it. So in future Christmas special episodes, we'll play some of that.
Mm.
But I just want to thank everybody for tuning in and listening to today's podcast, Feast of Fun, Honey.
I want to remind you, can't do this show without your support. So if you're not a Plus member yet, sign up today at feastoffun.com/plus or join us on Patreon at patreon.com/feastoffun.
We got a new Patreon subscriber today.
I think we got two.
Two, yes. Two,
yes.
Honey, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, guys.
Are we going to make a podcast or what?
Are we going to make a podcast or what?
Yeah, I'm going to be reposting Ali Willis, and I want to do a shout out to Mick, who just became a premium subscriber. Mick, thank you so much for listening to the show. And we're going to be playing some stuff from the Rural Triplets. What Have I Done to Deserve This? Which Dusty gave Dusty Springfield a late career boost.
Oh, yeah.
With the Pet Shop Boys.
What have I done to deserve this?
And she also got that song in the hands of the Del Rubio Triplets. Mm-hmm. So we're going to leave you here with the Del Rubio Triplets singing, What Have I Done to Deserve This? Thank you so much for listening.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You always wanted a lover. I only wanted a job. I've always worked for a living. How am I gonna get through? How am I gonna get through? I come here looking for money, got to have, and end up leaving with love. Oh, and now you've left me with nothing. Can't, how am I gonna get through? I brought you flowers. I read your books and talked for hours. But every day, so many drinks, as pretty flowers. So tell me, what am I? What am I? What have I done to deserve this? What am I? What am I? What have I done to deserve this? What have I? What have I? What have I? Since you went away.